Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. Thanks so much for joining me. In just a moment, I'll be speaking with Alim Santoric, and Alim is the founder of Women on Stage. And Alim has a unique story in that at a very, very young age, she envisioned herself being on stage and talking to women about aspiring to be more than they thought they could be. And her personal journey is one of having to leave her home country of Turkey for Switzerland and also overcoming workplace bullying, which is a very strong focus of her work today. As always, stay with us during the breaks where you'll hear from our exclusive watch team of corporate partners. And if you're a fan of the show and interested in becoming a part of it, we have some wonderful sponsorship and advertising opportunities. So feel free to reach out directly to me at susan@womentowatch.net. So now I'm excited and honored to welcome to the show Alim Santoric. Alim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks for being here with you. I'm really very much looking forward to our conversation today.
I am as well, and I'm really honored to have you. You're doing some incredible work over there in Switzerland. I'll let our audience know that that's where you are based. And I thought I would start the interview with what I think is kind of a remarkable story. When you were 5 years old, you told an uncle that you wanted to grow up and be on stage to talk to women about being more than they thought they could be. And here you are all these years later doing exactly that. What do you think prompted that dream at such a young age?
Thanks a lot for that question. Basically, it was what I was seeing around me, like what women were facing, the challenges women were facing. I was seeing my mom, I was seeing her friends, I was seeing other women that were working hard in the household, outside, but they were receiving little or almost no recognition for what they were doing. And observing all those challenges women had, I was thinking, I want to do it differently, and I want to have a different life. I want to have a life that where I actually, you know, I'm appraised, I am supported, that also I'm surrounded by people that care about me and support me. And with that, I want to also actually inspire and motivate women around me to say, hey, you are more than what other people say and let you feel. And you, I mean, all these women, including my mom, they had dreams, but they couldn't really make their dreams true, you know, because they were limited. They were surrounded by men and a community that was forcing them to give up on their dreams and just be happy and satisfied with the little, you know, the little that they had. And I had the dream to say, look, you don't have to do that. You don't have to make you small, you know, make you big, follow your dreams, and you can achieve your dreams if you believe in it, if you surround yourself with people who believe in you and who open you the doors. So that were this all of those were my thoughts. And luckily today I am at that stage, right? I can I'm financially fully independent, and I can motivate and inspire women, and I can support, I can give them a hand. Because I was also given a hand, I was also supported. And
we should, I think it's so important to mention that you were born in Turkey.
Yes.
And you were there for 12 years. So I'm sure you have very vivid and impactful memories of your time there before your family had to leave and move to Switzerland because of political reasons. And first, I wanted to talk about what your memories are of Turkey. And then when you left, did you know that your father, because of his actions and beliefs, was in danger?
I come from a very poor family, right? My family had very, poor conditions. They were farmers and they had little to live from. So my father had to go to the different cities, work and bring money home, where my mom was living with her in-laws and the kids of the in-laws. So it was a big family, but little income. So, but despite that fact, I was a happy child. So because for us, that was the normal life. Right. When I remember back, I now see that it was a life in poverty and we had little to live from. But I was in general a very happy child because I was a dreaming child. I had my dreams and I always, dreamt of what I wanted to become, et cetera, et cetera. And but we were moving from one city to another. So every year I was going to a different school. I was making different friends. But there was only one city where we lived for 4 years. And when I remember back, I was a very innovative child. And I wanted to become very financially independent at the early age. So I started working at the age of 7. So since I am 7, I'm earning my own money. So I'm financially independent. So I never had to ask my parents for a penny for my school or for my education, for my clothes. It was me helping them financially as well. So that was until the age of 12 when we immigrated to Switzerland, when we then had to, escape our home country, unfortunately, and come to Switzerland and start a life from zero in Switzerland. And the first 2 years were very, very hard for me because, first of all, as a child, I didn't know what was happening, why we had to leave and why we had to start a life again in a country. And when I arrived here, I thought, oh, Switzerland. I was hearing in the school books, like, oh, Switzerland is a very wealthy country. It has a very, it's a very democratic country, and it's a, like the country of opportunities. But then when you have a life of a refugee, where you are limited, you have also limitations from financial perspective. So I thought, okay, how can I become financially independent again? So I looked for opportunities, and I started babysitting. And that gave me, again, the opportunity to really become financially independent, and then also learn the language. That helped me also to learn the language much quicker, because from the kids, you learn very quickly everything, including the language. So, and I started connecting myself with people, with my teacher, with people in the community that we were living, to really make connections. And this is also how I found out how important it is to network, and how much, you can learn, and how much and your network can help you to advance and in whatever you want to do, and how supportive they can become. So, and it was, on one hand, a cultural difference. So, I mean, in Turkey, we are in an Eastern culture or Middle East culture. You know, we are the givers. We give a lot. We care a lot about each other. We share our food and everything. And it's a collectivistic culture. And coming from a collectivistic culture and starting your life from zero in an individualistic culture, that was like a cultural shock for me. And in the beginning, I was not really understanding why Swiss people, for example, wouldn't share their food. And when I was at school and I was sharing my food with my colleagues, oh, do you want to have a bite? Do you want to try this? I give you half of my food. And they were like, what? Why do you want to share your food with us? Do you want a bite from our sandwich as well? I said, no, you can keep your food. I don't want, but I want to share. In Turkey, when we wanted to jump on a bus and the bus driver would see us running, he would stop, you know. And in Switzerland, because Switzerland is so punctual, they wouldn't stop, you know, even though if you would wave them, knock on the door, they wouldn't stop because they have to leave on time, right? So these were things.
It's a busier culture there, right?
Yeah.
Than the community you came from.
Exactly. So there were so many differences, yeah. But I had to learn, how to adapt to the culture, to bring also the beauty of my culture into the Swiss culture, and use, you know, the beauties from both sides.
Yes. So as you're assimilating to the new culture, is there a part of Switzerland that you embraced and felt very good about, embracing for yourself as a citizen there?
Yeah, exactly. So because, especially when you're new in a country, the first thing is you need to learn the language. Then you need to understand the rules and the dynamics of that culture and the community. So I really tried to put a lot of effort into understanding the dynamics, the individual dynamics, the cultural dynamics, the legal dynamics, because Switzerland is a very legal or, let's say, diplomatic country. So and the quicker I could learn all of that, the easier I could navigate myself in that environment, and the quicker I could also make strong relationships with the community members, and that also helped me to grow quicker and faster and move myself faster in that country.
How old would you say you were, Alim, when you felt that you were a part of it, that you felt at home there? How long did that take?
I think that was when I was 19 and I got the Swiss passport. So I have dual citizenship. Okay. And when I applied for the Swiss citizenship and had to run or go through a number of exams and examination, and when I had that red passport in my hand, I was like, okay, now it's a new era starting for me. And I'm now welcomed because they accepted me and for who I am. And now it's a new chapter and I can feel that I belong here, because then I can really establish my life here. Because before, you know, when you're a refugee and you don't know whether you will be sent back to your home country or wherever you will go. So it's like, you don't know whether you belong. You don't belong any longer to your home country. You don't belong to the country where you live. So you're in between. And you cannot really, you know, become independent.
Yes. You had shared with me, you said we always felt as though we were in survival mode. And I'm wondering if that feeling has stayed with you as an adult. Does it show up in ways that you don't expect, or are you fully relaxed in the life now that you've created for yourself?
I'm a survivor. I identify myself as a survivor and as a fighter because this is in my DNA, right? So
And generations, yes. Right? Generations. Yes. Before you. Yeah,
exactly. So, and if you come from a region, from a country where the dynamics can change anytime, this could be war, this could be a political situation, this could be economical situation. When you come from that environment, you can survive when you have survival instincts and strategies that have proven you that you can survive. And therefore, I am still carrying those survival instincts, and I'm very actively using them in every stage of my life. So it is because it's part of my life, and this is part of me, and it's like a, you know, automated. It's like a, you know, it's happening subconsciously. It's not something that I say, okay, now I have to turn on my survival instinct. No, it's happening subconsciously, and it gives me the drive and the energy and the power to really do what I want, to come up with ideas that people would say, oh, this is a crazy idea. You know, we have, for example, we are planning now a huge summit next year in September in Basel. And when I shared the idea with a couple of people, and they're like, oh my God, this is too expensive, this is too complicated, this is impossible, no go. And I was, you know, and my instinct was that saying to me, go, do it, you can do it, it will happen, it will be a success. Right. If I wouldn't have that survival instinct, I would just say, okay, that's fine. Okay, if you say that, okay, I will give up. So I will not give up, and I will never give up, because this is something that I believe, and my survival instinct is telling me it's going to happen and it's going to be successful. Even if it's not going to be successful, it's going to be a learning, and it's going to be an opportunity to grow, right? And therefore, I'm using that in my own favor, in the favor of also many women and people that we are supporting at the moment.
Yeah, I think when you're describing that, it, you know, that it's really the definition of resiliency, the ability to continue to move forward because you've already been through some hardships. I'm wondering, for those of us who really don't understand fully the dynamics and the conflict between the Kurdish people and the people in Turkey, can you just briefly Describe what that is, and then how are things today?
Yeah, actually, there is no conflict between people. So my husband is Turkish, for example. I'm Kurdish from Turkey. And there is absolutely no conflict between the people, between the inhabitants of the country. So it was, and nowadays it's much, much, much better, thanks God. So it was just a political conflict, right? So it was actually at that time, for example, my father, he was politically active, and he had some beliefs. And because of those beliefs, he was imprisoned for 2 years. And after 2 years, he wanted to have start a new life with his family. But then his case was reopened and he had to escape. Otherwise, he would have been imprisoned again. But at that time, in the 80s, in the beginning of the 90s, this was a general problem in whole Turkey. So it was a political dilemma because Kurdish people, we are in the minority, and it was actually a minority and ethnicity issue. But nowadays, luckily, it's much, much more better, and there's almost no problem. And I have dual citizenship. I can travel to Turkey. I love my country. I am fluent in Turkish. I raise my kids up in Turkish. They love Turkey because it's their home country still. There is no problem from my side or from the countryside. But there were some problems back in the 80s and 90s. But luckily, it has been resolved. And
I'm so glad to hear that, especially for your children, for them to be able to go back and see where their people came from. Listen, we're going to go into our first break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the experience you had in the corporate world that really led you to want to support more women to kind of find their voice and stand up for themselves when it comes to bullying in the workplace. Stay with us as we go into our first break. You'll hear from our Watch team, and we'll be back with Alim Senturk.
Hi, my name is Christy McCaffrey. I'm the founder and owner of Be The Good Media, and I'm here to share some good news with you. Today, I wanted to share with you about a woman who is truly doing meaningful and impact-driven work in her community. Her name is Corinne O'Connell. Corinne is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Philadelphia. And as CEO, Corinne and her team work to make sure that every person in our city has a decent place to live. I was truly inspired in speaking with Corinne on my show because it was just so clear how passionate she is about making a meaningful impact in her community and in the lives of those she serves, not just today, but for many more years to come. You can hear more of my conversation with Corinne at BeTheGoodMedia.com, and there you will also learn more about how Be The Good Media helps to amplify impact-driven missions and causes. Again, I'm Christy McCaffrey. Stay tuned here on Women to Watch Media for more good news.
Ladies, I'm Tiffany Curtin, a financial professional with more than 25 years of experience serving successful women, families, and businesses. Here's the reality. You don't have to be the one managing your family's finances to take ownership of your future. But if you want true confidence about how everything is going to play out, you do have to take part in the process. That doesn't mean digging into the weeds of your finances when you don't have the time or desire. It means elevating your awareness of your own circumstances. It means having the bigger conversations so you're empowered when you need to be. Let's bring confidence to your family's future without overwhelming your time. Call my cell at 903-520-2709. That's 903-520-2709. Or visit Johnson Financial Group on our website, www.jfg.cc. Not .com, www.jfg.cc.
I'm Dawn Zier, CEO, board director, and executive mentor to Fortune 500 executives through my work at the EXCO Group, firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior leaders grow. Today on Leadership Watch, we're going to talk about being in the driver's seat of your career. No matter what stage you're at in your career, you need to grasp that you are in the driver's seat. Understanding from day one that you and you alone are responsible for your career is critical. After all, why would you hand your career over to someone else to manage? There's no one as vested in yourself as you. And the ugly truth is that most managers are focused on execution rather than team development. So how can you ensure that your career stays on track? First, make sure you have a clear set of agreed upon goals that are measurable, and if priorities shift, rewrite them with buy-in. Two, if you see something that can be improved upon or automated, don't wait to be asked, just do it. This is good advice for tech-savvy millennials and Gen Zs who can help lead the way with AI. Three, don't insulate yourself. Get to know other parts of the organization and network both internally and externally. Feel free to drive outside of your lane. And four, while your career is yours to own, don't go it alone. Identify sponsors and mentors. Also, it's important to make self-reflection and self-assessment a habit. Think through where you want to be 5 years from now and create a roadmap for yourself. Does your current path get you there? Are you passionate about what you're doing? Do you feel challenged? Are you learning? Do you feel respected? And importantly, are you a cultural fit? And is the company a cultural fit for you? If you answer negative to any of these questions, it's likely time for some course correcting. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, check out expoleadership.com to learn more.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. I'm joined this week by Alim Santurik, and she's the founder of Women on Stage. And we will definitely be talking about that organization and all that you're doing. But a big part of your story was experience that you had in what you describe as bullying in the workplace. And it's always remarkable to me that that kind of thing takes place among grown-ups. And describe for me what you went through and then how you... we'll talk about, you really had a fall. I mean, an actual breakdown from the years of kind of keeping it in. So talk about the experience and then what happened to you that really was the breaking point.
So, in my career, I used to work in pharma for 22 years. It happened to me twice in my career that I was bullied by my male managers. And the reason, in the end, it came out that they felt threatened by me because I'm a powerful, I'm a strong woman who knows what she wants. At the same time, I have a very positive behavior. I'm very resilient. I have very well connections. I was always well connected within the companies that I was working at. I'm a high performer and an achiever. So, you know, all this combination had made them to feel threatened by me, unfortunately. Although it was not my intention, I didn't do it by purpose. They felt that I am trying to overtake their role and responsibilities. So they had to find ways to put me in a corner where I would feel helpless, hopeless, and isolated. And the ultimate goal was that I quit. I quit the job. I leave that environment so that they have the space and room to flourish, to shine. So when it happened the first time, it was with a manager that was hired because I didn't have, they had promised me to get the job, the title. So they hired me. I had hired people, trained them, set up a full team. And when it was the time that they would give me the title, and the financial risk, like compensation for that role. All of a sudden they said, oh, Adam, you don't have a university degree, so we cannot give you that title. So we need to hire someone that brings the university background, education. And I said, okay, I mean, what could I do? I was disappointed, but I said, okay, I might learn from the person. Then they hired this guy who I had to train for 1 year because he had no clue about what we were doing. So I was like, okay, so training my manager, that's a great experience for me. I can also learn from him. He can learn from me. So exactly after 1 year, when his training finished, he started bullying me. But during that full year where he was trained by me, everything was perfect. I was like, oh my God, such a great leader, such a great manager. I was so happy. But then when the time, like, was the training was done, completed, and he was fully empowered to do the role himself, he was connected with everyone that he should have been connected, because I introduced him to everyone and he was trained. He started bullying me. And for 1 year long, I didn't understand what was going on. So he was shouting at me in front of my friends, my colleagues, basically my team members who I had hired. He was interrupting me during meetings, calling my presentations like, oh, this is a silly presentation, nobody will like it. Oh, like a mobile presentation again. He was, taking away from me responsibilities without telling me. He was delegating the responsibilities to some other people without informing me. He was removing me from meetings without any reason. He would forbidden me to go and talk to head of departments for my daily job because he was the team lead. And then he would even forbid me wearing high heels, having red lipstick, having red nail polish. And he was asking me to close the door of my office that people would go to him instead.
What did anyone around you, any of your colleagues, recognize and speak up ever?
They recognized, and I was sharing. I was going to his manager, who was my manager before, asking what's going on, what is this, because I had no clue about bullying. But nobody was speaking up, because they were kind of afraid that this could also happen to them. And everyone was telling me, oh, you will find ways to cope with it. Oh, you're a strong person. Let's, take it easy. And I was like, inviting my manager for lunches, for coffee breaks, for after work drinks, to really understand why he is doing this. What are his reasons?
I'm curious, was there a big age gap between the two of you?
No.
Or was
no, only a few
no.
years.
Okay.
Yes, only a few years.
Yeah.
And that's why I couldn't understand what's going on. Why is he, 1 year long, he was very nice to me. And I was like really admiring him from a professional point of view and from a personal point of view. And then all of a sudden he switched the coin, flipped the coin, and he showed me a completely different face and attitude and a behavior. So for 1 year, I really couldn't understand. I was talking with HR, I was talking with head of department, with other leaders in the company, trying to understand what is going on and why. And my manager was like, oh, this is your perception. No, this is not what I...
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Was doing that. He was talking.
And this is a big company you were with at the time,
yes,
correct?
It was a big pharma American company. And then I started feeling like, oh, okay, is it me? You know, am I imagining something? That is this really happening or am I dreaming? So I started asking my friends to observe. Like to observe the situations, my colleagues at work. And they were saying, yes, he shouted at you, yes. And sometimes they came to me and said, Adam, why are you not saying something? I was like, I mean, what can I say, you know? It's not changing situation because I don't know why he's doing that. But then after 1 year, when I realized that this is actually not appropriate and I should say something, I should do something against it, I started saying, oh, this is a behavior that I cannot tolerate, I cannot accept, or this is not in line with the corporate values and the mission and the vision. He didn't care. He said,
And you were starting to get sick. It was this when you were starting to feel not well from the anxiety of all?
Yes. First of all, it started with stress. I had developed a high level of stress because he was calling me to his office, for example. And every time he was calling me into his office, he would put in the subject line of an email saying, come to my office now. And it was like, what will he tell me now? What did I do wrong? And then I would go to his office and he would say, in that one email you sent to this person, there is a comma missing. Next time you send me your email first for a review before you send it out. And I was managing 19 projects global projects in parallel. And he wanted me to send for every single email that I was planning to send. And this would be hundreds of emails to send him. And I had to do it. I did it. But then that was delaying my activities, my daily work. So it started with stress because he was putting a lot of stress. The situation was creating a lot of stress. Then it continued with anxiety because I felt anxious when he was when I was surrounded by him. Every time he would call me into his office, and every time he would delegate me a responsibility, I was like, okay, when is he going to take it away? Has he taken it away without telling me?
So that's awful. That's an awful way to be living when you have to go to work every day in that kind of environment. And it sounds like it was very personal for some reason. So when did you make that decision that you had had enough?
So actually it was towards the end of the third year. So in the third year, I felt that I was damaged because I had a 1.5 hours drive to work and 1.5 hours back. And then during that time, I had 2 kids, and I was like, you know, sitting into the car, starting crying for 1.5 hours, going to office, swiping the tears, putting a smile on my face, working, and then leaving the office, you know, crying in the car for 1.5 hours, arriving at home, swiping the tears and putting a smile and spending the evening with my kids. So, and doing that for almost a year, one morning I woke up and I opened my eyes, but I couldn't move my body. So my body was paralyzed. And I couldn't move my body for 10 minutes. And this was the moment where my body said, I sent you so many signals. You ignored them. I told you to stop. You ignored it. So now I shut your body down that you realize how serious it is. Yeah. And that was the moment for me to say, hey, now I have to stop. Like,
I have to go
there. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I'm moving ahead a little bit just because of time, but your decision to create this organization, Women on Stage, I want to know, how many women do you see on a daily basis that are in the same place as you were then? Do you feel that there has been progress because of the open conversations that we're having, and kind of the, you know, policies among companies to not allow for that type of behavior to happen any longer? So how much of it are you seeing in the work that you're doing today with the women that you're helping?
Actually, every third woman that I'm talking almost every day is currently going through the similar experiences.
And would you say that's global? It's not just, right? It's not just in one particular area of the world.
No, it's globally, and it's happening at every company. And but I mean this is what I see, and especially in the companies where there is a very aggressive company culture, and a company culture which is mainly dominated by men. Of course, there are also female leaders that are bullying, right? It's not only men. In my case, it was 2 male managers, but there are also women that are being bullied by women. There are also men that are being bullied by women, right? So, but unfortunately, the problem is still there. It's not solved. Although some companies say, oh, we have anti-harassment trainings in place, We have D&I strategies in place. We have positive psychological behaviors in place, or we have this and that in place. Just this week, I had a conversation with a head of HR of a company here in Switzerland because they asked me to help them. And it was head of HR. And he said he's being bullied himself as well.
So here's a question I have for you, because I've, you know, in all the years that I have been talking to women like yourself from all different industries and fields, this particular problem continues to be with us. And I think about, as you mentioned, policies and that companies put in place, training. Is it just human behavior to behave poorly? Some people, I'm hoping it's a small percentage. And is it something that could be changed, turned around collectively or not? I mean, it's kind of a question that I struggle with often in when we talk about corporate companies putting training in place for behavior. Will that really work?
It's not enough, to be honest. We need to have strategies in place that is going to penalize the people who are showing those behaviors. You know, it should be zero tolerance policies in place, like for sexual harassment, right? If someone experiences sexual harassment, there are zero tolerance in place, policies in place in the companies. And this, the same should apply to any type of harassment, including, you know, microaggressivity, workplace bullying. So as long as there are no zero tolerance policies, it will happen. You know, you can train the people, you can train, you know, it's happening peer-to-peer bullying, it's happening, you know, at the managerial level, but those type of behaviors will always find a space to grow. And if you know there is really zero tolerance, so, and you will have any implication, because those people are, oh, I can do it and nothing will happen. Because, for example, I'm supporting currently a woman that is being bullied by her manager, and that manager has already sent 5 women into burnout, and they're all in a clinic, getting treatment in a clinic. And he is the partner, because he is the partner of a leadership team member, he's being protected. So there is no penalty for him. He will continue.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. There just has to be repercussions for those types of behaviors. But obviously, if it's the owner of a partner of a firm, I don't know how that could be done. But, you know, to have every employee of a company go through training on, you know, how to not be a bully, you're talking to people that aren't going to do that. It's the small number. So you founded Women on Stage in 2020. And that was a big, you know, it takes a lot of courage to start something like that. And first, how did you get the funding for it, if any, from outside sources?
There is zero funding. No funding. Okay. Because this is another problem we women have, right? Female companies that are funded by women are less supported financially than companies that are founded by men. But I started in the beginning of pandemic with zero budget at the kitchen table with my old laptop and everything online. So with really zero, no website, no promotional material, just the idea and LinkedIn. So no investment, with zero financial investment.
Yeah. So that's brave. And that's typical, I would say, of you. in how you've done things throughout your life. And I think in a very smart way, you're very actionable and purposeful about talking about the difference between mentors and mentorship and sponsors. So I wanted you to describe the difference for our audience, the definition that you have for the difference between a mentor and a sponsor, and why it's so important for women to have sponsorship.
Yeah. So I strongly believe, and I have seen it in my whole career, that we women, we are being sent to, you know, one mentor from one mentorship program to another mentorship program. And I have seen men having sponsors. So when I, every time I talk to a male leader, how he made it to that level, including the CEO of Novartis. So he said, I had and still have a sponsor that pushed me, that connected me with powerful leaders, that advocated for me, and they opened the doors for me. So, and in mentorship programs, it's usually, you know, the mentorship programs are usually to, you know, to equip you with your, with skills, knowledge, and more into in personal development. So, because it's a different dynamic. So the mentee is sits in the driver's seat, and the mentor is here to take an action whenever the mentee needs. But in a sponsorship, the sponsor is in the driver's seat, right? So the sponsor is in a more powerful role, has more visibility, and has the network that the protégé or the mentee doesn't have. So because in a mentorship, it can be anyone. It can be a young professional. It can be someone with experience. But in a sponsorship, there is, the sponsor can only be a person that has the power to open doors, has the network to connect you with, the network to increase your visibility, and someone that can grant access to the hidden job market. So that's it.
They are actually recommending and referring you, right? They're bringing up your name when there are opportunities.
Exactly. And there are, I mean, as a mentee or as a protégé, you might not know what opportunities are out there. So therefore, you cannot, you know, say, oh, I want to go there. I want to go there. So the sponsor can exactly tell you, okay, I see you there. You need to be connected with that person. You talk to that person. I connect you. It's like a bridge builder. So they build a bridge for you to design the career you want to have and to walk over that bridge, right? To really have access to the career that you want to have. And sometimes, I mean, especially when you're a young professional, you might not know what that career is in 5 years, 10 years, but through the experience that the sponsor has, can guide you, can push you, can support you, can advocate you to really open your horizon and perspectives and really have access to those people that you would never, ever have access to.
So tell me how you're doing that with women on stage. How are you connecting sponsors with women who need those opportunities?
Okay, so actually, it has been now 4 years that we have been doing that. Until this year, I had been doing it individually. So me connecting people with leaders who acted as career sponsors. At the moment, we have a program that where we support 10 women at the same time. So they join a program that is for 3 months. And during this 3 months, in the beginning of the program, they are connected with 10 leaders that are also in the same program. And every single woman is matched with a leader. So while they have access to all 10 leaders working in different companies, they are being matched with one leader that is dedicated for them. So, and they go the journey, they walk through the journey together with the sponsor. And so in the beginning, we do profiling with them. So what that means is, so we run the candidates, so the female talents, through an assessment, which is called Profile Dynamics, to really understand their strengths, their skills, but also their triggering points, because this is very important for the company they want to move, for the environment they want to move, and for the roles and responsibilities they want to have. And we shared this profile with their sponsors so that they really see behind the curtain, right? They see all the skills and strengths and the triggering points of the candidate. And through the sponsors, they have access. So the sponsors have very clear responsibilities. They have the responsibility to increase the visibility of the talent within the company they are working, but also outside of the company. So the sponsors can hire the talent for their own department, division, company, free of charge. Or they can recommend them. If there is nothing for this candidate in their company, they can refer them to other companies, to other roles. And
did I read, Elam, that this is you're working with specifically within the life science industry?
Yes. At the moment, we work within the life science industry, which is medtech, biotech, pharma, and healthcare.
Okay.
But as of next year, we are also planning to expand into other industries.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I ask, you know, is Women on Stage a revenue generating
Yes.
program?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you have a team? Do you have a team now?
Yes.
That's supporting your
yes.
work?
Yes. We have now a team of 10 coaches. They all come
okay.
from the life science industry. They have all worked in the life science industry. Plus, we have 6 advisory board members. Plus, we have 30 chapter heads that all come
okay.
from the life science industry and advocate for us in different cities of Switzerland.
And then my last question for you, are you helping women in the United States or only in Switzerland?
So in the United States, not yet, but as of 2025, we want to expand to the United States.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is our plan, and also through to other European countries, because the goal is really to be able to help all women in every single country. So
yes,
in all industries.
I would imagine you'll be able to do that because the pharma industry, there's so many global companies.
Definitely.
So the connections, the networking will just organically spread from country to country.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we have at the moment great interest from the US, but also all countries. But the goal was first to really get stronger in Switzerland, establish everything in Switzerland, and then step by step go outside of Switzerland and also establish a Women on Stage entity in different countries so that we can help women there, and also that we can bring the sponsorship program into companies to actually train talents early on, female talents early on, then to help them to move up the career ladder up to C-level. So the ultimate goal is also to increase the number of female leaders in the companies and in the board, so that we have already a talent pool in the company that is really ready to take the leadership roles.
And then actually hire the women. Yes,
exactly.
And it's never good to go too big too fast, right? So, I think the way that you're doing that, And not only that, you launched during the pandemic in 2020. That was a tough time for anyone to be starting anything new. So
yeah, it was tough, but I would say it was really an advantage for us because we could really step in to the work online. So we could reach out women globally. And nobody had to
right, travel. And that's where everyone was there,
yes.
Right? We were all online in our houses.
Exactly. And we didn't have to travel.
Yeah.
We didn't have to spend money on any
right.
traveling, or we didn't have to have the full equipment, like a studio, the one computer, one webcam, and one microphone was enough, an internet connection. So we didn't need, or I didn't need any office equipment, any furniture. So I didn't have to do any big investments that you would usually do when, you know, rent an office, then office equipment and hiring people. So I didn't need to do all of that.
Yeah. Well, you're a great example of what can be done with very little. You know, in other words, you don't have to go and get all of this funding to start a business. You know, you can start small and have it organically grow because it's something that's relevant and it's needed.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, at one yeah. point, we might need investments and funding and grants. But so far, we could really, you know, use the revenue that we were generating, reinvest it into the coaches that we had to hire. And into the facilities now, we do our face-to-face workshops combined with online workshops. So we are reinvesting all the revenue back into all these activities. We are running events. So we are running number of face-to-face events per year. And so as I mentioned earlier, there is one big event that we are planning next year in September in Basel. So where we will be also using all our spendings. So, and therefore, I think starting small and, you know, moving with small steps, like baby steps, is so important. So because you can lose your, intention, you can lose your attention when you grow too quick and you can be all over the places. So my goal was really to start with baby steps and learn and try, experiment, and then see, okay, what's working versus what's not working. So really that we can adjust. I mean, the Sponsoring Women program, I had tested it with so many individuals free of charge to see that is really working. Then I tested it with the university students, with PhD graduates. So we did run a pilot project at the University of Bordeaux in France. So, and then before we could implement it at the university. So it was a lot of testing, piloting, and validating. And now we have a very, you know, very successful, well-validated program that we can fully implement at an institution, organization, or, with women. We are now going into an agreement with the unemployment agency here in Canton Basel-Stadt. So then later on with all the cantons, which is the states, different states, 26 states of Switzerland. So to really help women, unemployed women coming from the life science industry, to reintegrate them back into the economy and industry.
Yeah. Well, it's really wonderful work that you're doing, and I hope you'll stay in touch, and I'm happy to connect you with women here in the United States. And I thank you so much for taking time late at night to be with me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. And if there are any women, you know, watching us that need some help, support to advance in their career, they can, should feel free to reach out to me.
Okay. They will be sharing your information when the show goes live next week.
Thanks.
Thank you, Elam. We're going to go into our last break, and I'll be back to close out the show. Children's Hospital of Philadelphia has long been ranked as one of the best children's hospitals in the country. In our Women to Watch at CHOP series, we'll meet the women working to preserve this best-in-class pediatric innovation. Let's meet Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Sophia Holder. Sophia, just take a minute to kind of introduce yourself to our guests. Tell them a little bit about where you came from and how you ended up in this role.
Yes, and thank you, Susan, for just the amazing work that you do to inspire women leadership. I would still call myself as new to CHOP. Started just over 3 years ago, and I'm honestly in my dream job in an organization that is focused on delivering and innovating care for children. And so it's hard not to find joy in that space. My career in healthcare spans many years, starting in the adult side and now on the pediatric side. And I'm just really thrilled to be with you today.
What advice would you have for our listeners and our viewers listening to you today?
So I would offer two pieces of advice. Focus on continuous learning. Be a life learner. That's the frame that I often use with those who work with me and for me. Stay updated on industry trends. Continuously seek opportunities for learning and growth. Knowledge is power in any leadership role. I think the other piece of advice I would give is model authenticity. Be authentic and true to yourself. Authentic leadership builds trust and loyalty among your team and your peers, foundational to building effective teams and supporting cross-collaboration and partnership.
Thanks so much to Sophia Holder for joining us. Stay tuned for more Women to Watch at CHOP.
We are CHOP, and we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. Three state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level one trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR-T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks so much for joining me. Next week, I'll be sitting down with Inga Smits, and Inga is the CEO of Cable and Wireless Communications. She's doing some great work in the Caribbean right now for communities that have been not connected. Thank you, as always, to our sponsors and our Watch team members for bringing us their contributions to the show. And I hope you all have a great week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.